C1S. Number 22A.
Well, we came to the end of the text in the part of theology, and perhaps I just want to finish that part by raising the consciousness to that point where we begin to see that the newness of life is something that through mind we should welcome over and over and over. That the newness of life has much more in store of us than what we have already received in the way of revelation and instruction. That revelation is going on and on. That revelation is never final. That the infinite never repeats itself, so that we shouldn't be in danger of only going back and back to what we have seen before, but be ready and receptive for the new light, to be always the wise virgins to receive the new form of the Christ. I think this is important because one can see from history that each church, after its initial success, usually gets into ruts and gets stale and gets narrow and gets, bigoted. Did you get that in the back? And so that we don't fall in the same danger, that which John Dorley has said 20 years ago is not to be seen as the final word. Now don't accuse me of not honoring John Dorley by saying so. I know it takes a bit of courage to say so, but I think I can do so because I always acknowledge his contribution and what he has done in the talks, in my books, and so on. But I think we would dishonor him much more if we would say, well, he has said the last word, and we are not allowed to think in new lines and further and say things which he hasn't seen or said. Because his attitude was life. His great theme was on we go and ever on and on. So let's go on, and then we honor John Dorley and what he has seen and discovered. We can be quite sure that if John Dorley would be here after he has left us 17 years ago, he wouldn't repeat the same thing what he has said 17 years ago. We are quite sure about that he would have gone forward. And the thing which he expects us to do is also to go forward. Now, this naturally is always open to criticism, that the criticism comes up and says, well, they want to do something more than John Dorley. They want to be more than John Dorley or anything like that. But don't let's accept such criticism. We just have to stick to life, to the true theology, which is lifting us out of a narrow theology into a wide, unrestricted vision of a new theology, so that we really can go on and be free in going on, and that we stem the tide of sectarian bitterness that might try to flow in. We must be a free people, free thinkers. That doesn't mean that we must go wild in freedom, because fundamentally we have the system laid down in the textbook and explained through John Dorley, a system which stands and which stands the ages. But that doesn't mean that this system can be elaborated, that it can unfold, that it can become warm, that it become more alive and warmer and tender and so on. So let's be aware that we really obey what he said, and on we go and ever on and on. without sectarian bitterness coming in. Well, this ends the part on theology. Actually, I don't want to start with medicine for the last remaining half hour that is left, but I think what I could do perhaps is to see what we really mean by the term Christ idea. Let me perhaps just talk for the rest of the afternoon on the Christ idea. We have mentioned that term so often in this chapter, especially because within the framework of the matrix, this chapter stands as the Christ as Christ. Therefore, the emphasis is really on the Christ and the Christ idea. What does the Christ idea really mean? The Christ idea has two terms, Christ and idea. Now we know, in order to take the first term, Christ, that Christ has nothing to do with Jesus, that Christ is the divine idea of God. He would say it's the true idea of God. What is this true idea of God? She says that the Christ expresses the spiritual, eternal nature of God. So the Christ is God's expression of himself. We know that God is self-existent, as the word, but he is also self-expressed. And the moment we have that self-expression, we get the touch of the Christ, where we see that this self-existent God is not a static God, but is a dynamic God. That God's innate nature is to express itself eternally and always anew. That without really God's expression of himself, God would be a non-entity. And without God's expression of himself, man would be a non-entity. So the Christ is really that which shows the dynamics of God, so as man becomes dynamic. That the idea of man is eternally a dynamic unfoldment of being. This Christ, we know, is eternal. It didn't start with Jesus. That it antedated Abraham. That Jesus could say, before Abraham was, I am. That this Christ, because it is the expression of God, is as old as God. So that this Christ went on and on since ever, before there were men on earth. The Christ was here, because before mortals were on earth, Christ was here. Christ was at work. Christ was working out its own infinite plan. Yes, Christ has a plan. That's the innate nature of the Christ idea, that this expression of God is teleperfectionistic, that it has an enormous plan, which is right from the beginning perfect, its aim is perfect, and the way it works out is perfect. The Christ is therefore that which fulfills a plan, fulfills God's eternal plan. What is the idea when we talk about the Christ idea? We know that God has an idea. But the term idea must be understood rightly in connection with the Christ. Because in connection with the Christ, we cannot put idea in the plural. There are not Christ ideas. There's just the Christ idea. But the Christ idea naturally manifests itself in infinite ideas. But the Christ idea as such is in the singular, because there is one God and one Christ. This idea of the Christ is really that which God conceives in himself, expressed in himself, executes in himself and fulfills in himself. That's the idea which God has about himself, that he has that Christ plan which he has set out to fulfill. So when we talk about the Christ idea as a compound term, as we would say, then let's see what it is meant by it. It's meant by it that God has an expression that is eternally going on, that this expression eternally going on is teleological because it has a definite, perfect plan in view, and that God himself conceives of this plan, that God himself expresses that plan, that God himself directs that plan and executes that plan, fulfills that plan. If we get that touch, perhaps as I've tried to epitomize it, we get the sense of what is meant by the Christ idea. Therefore, it is the infinite ideal of God, the Christ idea. God has an infinite ideal about himself and says, my ideal is to bring out life, truth and love in the infinite universe as infinite ideas of life, truth and love. This is my ideal. And in order to fulfill that ideal, the Christ idea executes that plan. Really, it's the dynamic of manifesting that plan. So that inwardly we know, oh, quite separate from mortals, from mortal thinking, there is in reality an enormous dynamic of being at work. A dynamic of being which acts according to an intelligent plan. And this plan is conceived by God himself and not by man. That God himself has an idea. That's why idea is also explained as the image in mind, capital M. So what God has set out to fulfill is the Christ idea. Therefore, it is completely independent of human thinking. Let's be quite clear about that. That no matter if there are humans on the world or not, no matter if those humans are thinking about God or not, the Christ idea is at work and is going to fulfill its mission. Now, if we want to consider this Christ idea in more detail, we can look at it, say, from the four different sides of the Holy City. From the Word, from the Christ, from Christianity, and from science, so as to get a clearer, more concise, more tangible concept of what this Christ idea is. Let's look at it from the point of view of the Word, from the seven synonymous terms. What could we see that this Christ idea is? This Christ idea, which is the infinite one expressing himself as the infinite plan set out to be accomplished. Well, as mind, I think we could see that this Christ idea, which is ever at work, is always knowing himself and his own plan. So he's not ignorant about what it is going to happen, so that we have the certainty that whatever is going on is in line with what mind has outlined and has set out in his own mind. That mind knows his own plan. From the point of view of spirit, we know that this Christ idea, knowing its own plan, always includes its own reflection within itself. So that we can see that the Christ idea not only is the expression of the infinite, but also its own reflection of the infinite. so that all reflections of the infinite, all reflections of life, truth and love are included in that one reflection of the Christ idea at work. And that gives us perhaps in soul the sense that therefore all ideas that come from this Christ idea, all ideas that are manifested through this Christ idea, partake of the identical nature as God. That each idea that comes to us is qualitatively as big as God. Therefore, partake of the same nature of life, truth, and love. So that even every little idea that reaches us and becomes conscious of us from the Christ impulsion, we know that it is God impelled, that it is God unfolded, that it is God blessed, that it is God operated, God exalted, God conscious, God fulfilled, that it has all what God has. This Christ idea never leaves principle, because it's always one with the principle, so that it always operates within the whole principle, therefore operates as our whole system, as our whole inseparable unity with God. It is on the ground of this Christ idea that we feel the unity between God and man, the Immanuel, God with us, and have that feeling that the Christ idea never lets us go, never lets us out of its government, out of its reign of government. From the point of view, perhaps, of life, we could see that this life, this Christ idea ever going on, shows that every idea of this manifestation of the Christ idea is individual with God, is indivisible with God, so to say. That when the Christ idea is at work, that then the ideas flowing from that working of the Christ idea has always the power of the Infinite One. That each idea, therefore, has the substance of the Infinite One. It just hasn't a little bit of substance, a part of substance, a measure of substance. Every idea, because it is indivisible with life, is always partaking of the whole nature of life. So that each idea has the power of the infinite, has the substance of the infinite, has the blessing of the infinite, has the spiritual power of the infinite, has the exalted power of the infinite, has the consciousness of the infinite, it's always conscious of everything going on, and has really in itself the holiness and glory of the infinite. As an idea of truth, this Christ idea is operating as true consciousness, as that consciousness which tells us that because every idea is within the infinite itself, it is always conscious of every other idea. This is so important to see that whatever idea comes to us, that it is conscious of its principle, that it is conscious of all other ideas, and that it is conscious of its own mission, so that it knows what to fulfill. In practice, this is so important because whenever the divine mind speaks to us and gives us a right idea, that at that very moment we know this idea, because it is born of the Christ, is God's idea and therefore knows the whole of the situation, knows how to fulfill its mission, how to attain its perfection, and knows how to attract all the other ideas necessary for the whole fulfillment of that very situation. So that from the point of view of love, we begin to realize that whenever the Christ idea is at work, it is at work as love, as all-inclusiveness, as an idea which can never be outside of the Infinite One. And therefore, every idea that comes to us from the Christ standpoint is the idea necessary and adapted to the situation. is essential to the whole, is not something which is inessential, unimportant, but always partaking of the partaking as an essential part within the whole. And in this way, perhaps we can see what is meant by the Christ idea from the point of view of what it is, of its own nature, from the point of view of the world. Naturally, we could say, well, what has that to do with the material universe? And so, from the point of view of the second side of the Holy City, from the Christ, we can see that this Christ idea, as the Christ, is that which determines the relationship between God and the material universe. What relationship exists between that Christ idea and the material universe? Here we see, for instance, that which we have touched upon when we were considering the evolution of life or the evolution of the material world, that is one of the very clear illustration of the actuality of a Christ existing and of the actuality of the demonstrating power of the Christ, because this Christ dynamic didn't leave the material universe in peace. It is that tribulation that comes and which the earth says, why art thou, truth, come to disturb us before it is time? Because this Christ idea is that power which works in spite and against the material universe. It is the Christ power that is behind the evolution. And the time will come when this will be recognized by the natural scientists. I'm sure they will give up their pantheistic theories about the evolution of life when they see that the Christ was always at work not to improve matter from the first living cell to the conscious man, but that just the opposite was happening. That through, under the impulsion of the Christ idea, the rigidity of matter had to give up its rigidity. The staleness of matter had to give up its staleness. The limitations of matter had to give up its limits, so that there was an infinite ever-going-on unfoldment in life, which seems to human sense as an evolution of matter, but which is really the abdication of the narrowness and limitations of matter under the impulsion of the infinite Christ. It is the infinite Christ that made matter give up its belief that it is a creator. And so the first living cell appeared. It is the Christ that forced the law of matter to evolve and had to give way to the infinite diversification of life. It is always the Christ that demanded had its impact, so to say, on matter, so that matter gave up its resistance. It's really that what we had today in theology, life as spirit, where she showed that the superiority of spiritual power against material resistance. And so, really we can see in the evolution up to man how matter gave way to the spirit, so that in man the spiritual aspect of man becomes bigger and bigger, and the material aspect of man becomes smaller and smaller. I must increase, the Christ must increase, and you must decrease, matter must decrease. And this evolution is showing how more and more matter is giving up its claim, and how much more the diversification of spirit is unfolding and unfolding. Dunuy says that evolution has unfolded in a direction forbidden by material science. See, he could see that there is a law of life, of intangible life, immaterial life, that was much stronger than the direction given by material science. Also, I think evolution shows something which is so important, namely that evolution has gone on long before mortals were thinking, so that it shows that the Christ idea is really independent on mortal thinking or the thinking of mortals. I feel this is so important for us to know, because somehow there still lingers in the Christian Science terminology and conception that thing that unless we think the truth isn't working. Well, the truth is working just the same. We cannot make truth work by thinking. But we can only realize that and be convinced of that and rest in the assurance of that when we have grasped what is meant by the working of the Christ idea, by grasping that the Christ is that which is working in spite of mortal thinking, in spite of matter, in spite of the testimony of the senses, in spite of human theories and doctrines and sciences, in spite of organic matter, in spite of mortal consciousness. It's working always in spite of the opposite. Not with the help or in cooperation with anything else. This gives really an assurance of what it will be when we accept this Christ idea working in our human experience. Then we will see that if we accept the Christ idea as the dominant factor in being and in our being, then we begin to realize that really only because God has a Christ that there is a creative impulse in us, that we are not working creatively because mortals think creatively and constructively. It is that mind, capital M, that mind who has a Christ idea is impelling thought to give way to the creative ability and the creative thinking within us. That because spirit has a Christ idea, there is unfoldment and development in our life. Not because we think we want to unfold and progress and make an effort to progress. It is because the Christ idea is impelling our spirit in us anyway, any sort and shape of evolution. Or we begin to see, because soul has a Christ idea, there is actually going on a reformation, there is going on a change, a constant change, a revaluation within us of values. And this change and reformation is not going on because we want to reform. It is not the theological sense of reformation. You should reform yourself, you should do better, you should do different. When we grasp the Christ idea changes us, reforms us. And that reformation is a graceful reformation if we don't resist it.